wish you success.
Gentlemen, to a very relaxed and easy, free-flowing and unimpeded Friday show with the Swerdlows. It's going ape, ladies and gentlemen. Attention, planet Earth. I'm your host, Vinny Eastwood from the Vinny Eastwood Show, and we also have the fabulous Swerdlows. That's Stuart and Janet. Welcome, guys.
Hello.
Hi, Vinny. Well, it's good to be back.
It is. It is. Have you noticed that when we get together, we kind of channel this very, very dark energy?
Well, we've got to turn some light on to that.
Oh, yes. A lot of thought crimes are going to ensue.
Yeah.
Indeed. We had a guest planned, and as we're attempting to connect them in the studio behind the scenes, we wanted to just give the floor to you guys for today to talk about whatever you wanted to talk about, really.
Well, thank you, Vinny. And actually, we have a lot to talk about today, and we're waiting for hopefully our guests to sign on. In fact, all the things that are going on right now in Greece are very important to the state of Europe because, as you may know, there is a concerted effort to collapse the euro and to replace the euro and the dollar with a new global currency. Now, we have seen in the last few months that the former British Prime Minister, Tony Blair, has been, given the function of trying to create a new European superstate that would be basically a dictatorship that encompasses the entire European continent, where each European country no longer has any independence or even a government of its own, but each country then becomes a province in this huge European superstate.
And so basically, it's just everything as normal, except it's no longer hidden.
Well, that's correct. That's absolutely correct. And unfortunately, after Greece, we're going to see rioting in Spain and even Britain. One of the sources I have in Europe, who's closely connected to Illuminati, told me just recently to expect the same thing you see happening in Greece to very shortly occur in Britain.
Yep. It seems to me that, that's the reason I've never liked John Travolta very much, because of Greece.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to slip on Greece and fall on the backs there and then see what happens.
We have to grease ourselves up and go into the air vents on this one.
Absolutely. Too. Absolutely.
Because there's going to be a tight squeeze. I feel it like the kind of cat's coming out of the bag. People are realizing that this kind of privatization, austerity, is really just asset grabs by bankers who created a whole lot of debt out of absolutely nothing and sold it to people like it was the best thing since sliced heads.
Absolutely. And, you know, what we see happening in Europe, we can also expect to see in North and South America within the next year or so.
Yeah, I think that we might be thinking a bit more broadly than that. New Zealand's government is sinking into debt astronomically fast. Like here's some of the numbers, right? 4 million people, and we're borrowing, wait for it, something like $400 million a week.
Wow. That's okay. What are you people spending it on?
Well, apparently we needed a whole bunch of new BMW limousines for the parliamentarians.
Oh, and well, also, sign me up for one of them.
Well, and also we needed to give away a decent cut of our oil reserves to foreign oil companies like Petrobras, who are known contaminators and polluters who violate their own rules and procedures and wind up destroying water supplies and stuff all over the place with their fracking. And conveniently, one of our great activists back in the 60s, Tim Shadbolt, who, you know, rose to become the mayor of Invercargill, the southern place where they're going to be doing all this offshore drilling in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. He managed to negotiate us a very sweet deal, 25 New Zealand cents a barrel.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. And sell it on the open market for what, like 100?
Well,
after
that's...
having all the risk of that kind of Gulf of Oil Kano replicated all over again, we get 25 cents a barrel.
Just lovely.
That's how they work it, man. They give you the slightest amount of cheese and have a remarkably overproportioned spring trap.
Yeah. Well, I think that sooner or later they're going to have a big surprise.
Well, let's hope so. Because, quite frankly, I'm getting cynical, Stuart. Because I continue to get less and less surprised by the kind of...
well, good for you. Yeah. And am I seeing Dr. Sam on the Skype there now?
Yes. I'm
hey,
here.
Sam.
Hello.
Okay. Welcome to the
show.
How
are you?
Thank you, guys.
It's a pleasure to have you here with us. We're so thrilled. We can't begin to tell you.
All right. So let's go to the other topic, the pyramids.
Oh, dear.
The pyramids, like in the Transformers movie.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, it was quite an amazing experience for all of us to drive across Bosnia, not even knowing if we were going to find the pyramids or even the town of Visoko, because as you may know, GPS doesn't work so well in Bosnia these days, ever since the war. But fortunately, we were able to find the pyramids. We climbed to the top of the Pyramid of the Sun with a guide. And of course, we fell a couple of times because I had a 20 kilo bag around my neck. So the guide thought that was rather humorous. But we made it up and back, and then we drove to the other pyramid and found Dr. Osmanagic, which was a serendipity for us, and we were so thrilled that we got a chance to meet you.
Well, so we've got the Dr. Osmanagic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And
well, I was glad to see you in Visoko, Bosnia, also a couple of weeks back. And as you could see, we have a really great discovery. We have a whole valley of pyramids followed by a huge underground network of tunnels and chambers and intersections and underground lakes. So really what we have here in central Bosnia is one of the greatest archaeological discoveries.
Well, I definitely agree with that. Stuart has traveled the world and I have gone to many, many places. But what we experienced in Bosnia, we really didn't know what we were going to experience. We have seen you on YouTube, and we have heard rumors, and people have written to us. So we needed to see for ourselves, and what we found surpassed what we thought we would find. It's absolutely an amazing, amazing place. And what you have done and you're doing, and I do know in the beginning from my research that you actually started excavating using your own funds. So we know you believe in that project.
Exactly right. 6 years ago, in April of 2005, I first came to the central Bosnian town of Visoko. And when I saw these hills with the regular geometry, four triangular faces, obvious corners, and put a compass to it, which showed me east, west, north, south, I immediately knew that we have man-made structures under the layers of soil and vegetation. Even though, you know, when you mention the word pyramid, you fly to Egypt and those big blocks at the Giza Plateau in the desert, we have to know that majority of the pyramids in the world are actually covered by soil and forests, like 250 of them in central Chinese province of Shanxi, or thousands of them in Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Belize, or Mexico, because we are in different climate belts. And for thousands of years, the soil accumulated on the top of the pyramids.
Would you say that there is a global affinity towards pyramid constructions in the ancient world, that the entire world shared this one form of culture?
You see, what they've been teaching us in schools is wrong. They said that the pyramids are built in Egypt and Mexico. But really, the pyramids, they've been built on all six continents. In Egypt, of course, we have 155 of them, and we have thousands of them in Mexico, but also 300 in Peru. We have them in Bolivia. We have them in Canary Islands in Atlantic Ocean. I saw and investigated seven of them in the island of Mauritius, in the middle of the Indian Ocean. They are in Indonesia. They are in Cambodia. So obviously, there was a worldwide concept of pyramids. But then we need to distinct the original, the oldest, and the most superior pyramids from the replicas built by pharaohs or Chinese emperors or the others who were using inferior material like mud and the brick, and they did not know the real purpose of those structures.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you.
Oh, go ahead, Stuart.
No. So do you feel that there was one central culture in ancient times that had the technology to build these pyramids, and it is from there that these other cultures copied that format and tried to build their own cultures based on this?
Well, what I call the original pyramids are built obviously in Egypt, on the Giza Plateau, but also in Mexico, in the city of Teotihuacan. Some of them are in Peru, China, Bosnia. So they are all over the place. Now, either it was some type of the super civilization, or there were several very advanced civilizations that they were communicating to each other. Of course, you know, unless we know we found the real builders, we have to be open for different options, you know, very advanced humans or very advanced beings. So, you know, it'll be kind of mystery for years to come.
Well,
do you believe?
I was going to say, what you said made me think of Alexander the Great, because his advanced culture, when he was taking over the Persian Empire, he would allow one of his magistrates to stay on as the chief of a town, and they would marry into the local families and things of that nature and adopt local custom. But they would ultimately rule the day. So I thought about possibly a military campaign or a propaganda campaign that happens globally over a long period of time of temple-worshipping, pyramid-building, militaristic, advanced people conquering the entire world, but allowing everybody to express their own culture individually.
I agree. That's a possibility that it really spread that way. That's a possibility. But now, again, we need to come down to the question, who really built those? Because obviously the pharaonic Egypt did not have the knowledge or engineering skills to build the pyramids that we call Cheops, Khafrens, Mycerans, or Sneferus. The same thing with the city of Teotihuacan. The historians are telling us they are 2,200 years old without one single proof, radiocarbon datings, tools, organic material, nothing. The same thing with the Peruvian pyramids, you know, Huaca del Sol or Huaca de la Luna in the city of Trujillo, huge, huge structures. And, you know, you can see the vertical erosion on them. It means they've been exposed to the, you know, rain, precipitation, storms. And for 7,000 years, the climate has been the same, desert, dry. So we go back in the past, 7, 10, 12, 15,000 years. So it raises the question, who was there on this planet in the previous cycle? Obviously, our history did not start with Sumerians, Babylon, Akkad, Assyria, ancient Egypt, or ancient India. There's just the last cycle. Before this one, there was a previous one with obviously very advanced civilization. You go to eastern Lebanon, to Baalbek, you can see the blocks there, 1,200 tons in mass. Our technology can move only 350 tons. So we have proofs from the physical world that advanced civilizations, so with capabilities four times bigger than ours, did
and that even comes out on television sometimes. I was watching this this travel program. This woman's cruising down the Nile, and she does that kind of gimmicky thing where you get into with a local fisherman in a boat and whatever, and you go down. And she asks him, "How did they build the pyramids?" And he tells her, "They tapped the massive stones with a wand and floated them through the air along the Nile and placed them neatly on top of the pyramid and stacked them all up."
Well, that's a possibility. The similar legends are in Mexico. Even though I think that the theory of the Frenchman, Dr. Joseph Davidovitz, is simpler. He is basically saying they were not cutting the blocks. They were actually pouring them at the site, making them like some type of the ancient concrete. And instead of 200,000 slaves, like they've been teaching us wrong, you would need just 2,500, you know, skilled workers. So there are options that could explain them, but also with such a precision and so much engineering skills and also astronomical, mathematical, geometrical knowledge.
We'll have to talk about this on the other side of the break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, Going Ape, Attention Planet Earth. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show.
It's Going Ape right here. Ape stands for Attention Planet Earth, with the Swerd Lows. And, that's the down low with the Swerd Lows. Yes. And we have a very special guest. Sam Oz Managich. Oh, I like to say that Oz. Maybe it is, yeah. And you are technically a doctor too, are you, Dr. Oz?
Dr. Oz, or Dr. Sam. Yeah, my PhD is in Mayan civilization. I spent a considerable amount of time in Central America. Now, as I said, the question is, what would be the purpose of the Bosnian pyramids? You have a huge structure, the biggest on the planet, you know, made out of concrete and passageways. But what is the purpose? What they've been teaching us about the Egyptian pyramids was that, you know, they've been tombs for the pharaohs. Well, that's wrong, because the pharaohs, they were buried 200 miles south from Giza Plateau in the Valley of Kings. But let's see what's happening in Bosnia. Last 2 years, we have been measuring electromagnetic phenomena, electromechanical phenomena like ultrasound and infrasound, and other electric and magnetic phenomena. Why? Because we measure that the Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun does produce the energy beam which comes through the very top of the Sun Pyramid in Bosnia. It has to be an artificial source for this energy beam, which is about 13 feet radius and 28 kilohertz. Frequency. Now, that's the frequency of the ultrasound. We cannot hear it, we cannot see that, but we can measure it. I had independent teams from Croatia, the physicists from Zagreb, from Finland, from Italy, and from Serbia, and they all confirmed that we do have a frequency of 28 kilohertz on the top of the Sun Pyramid, but also we have ultrasound, which is a mechanical phenomenon on the top of the Sun Pyramid, at the tumulus, and in the tunnels. So it seems that we face some type of the ancient technology. And you guys, you were in the underground tunnels in Bosnia, and you were able to see those big blocks, we call them megalithic blocks. Actually, when we analyzed the material, they told us it was a ceramic. Now, in archaeology, we got used on small ceramic dishes, ceramic vases, small objects. But here we have some of the blocks, they are up to 18,000 pounds. They are huge. They were made, they were pulled at the site in two pieces, in the base, because they would pull the base, then they would place some strange oval objects inside, and then they would cover it with the lid. So what we realized was that all those megalithic blocks, they are placed above the underground water flow, above the underground rivers. Why? If you have the underground river, you have the energy flow. The energy is hitting those blocks, those little oval objects. They are surrounded by ceramic. Ceramic has the property to vibrate, and it produces electromagnetic field. So our tunnels are covered by so many blocks, and you have electromagnetic fields everywhere, and then you have a lot of quartz crystal inside, and through the piezoelectrical effect, they produce ultrasound. Why is ultrasound important? That's something that we cannot hear. We can hear up to 20 kilohertz. Ultrasound is 28 up. So the animals can hear the ultrasound, and inside the huge network, we are not finding any bones, no animals, no nothing. It seems that somebody created and designed the construction underground that would keep the animals out. Now, this is getting more and more exciting. What we discovered last summer were the first three underground chambers. They are from 300 square feet to 500 square feet. In every underground chambers we have from 6 to 8 side tunnels. So they are very important meeting places. And then we measured the concentration of negative ions. As you know, negative ions are good for our bodies because they kill microbes, viruses, bacteria. Outside the tunnels, the average concentration is about 1,000 kiloions per cubic centimeter. In your studio, it's even less, about 500. In my home, about 500. But in that underground chamber, the concentration is much higher, about 43,000 kiloions per cubic centimeter. In other words, we have some type of the underground hospital or healing place, because there are no viruses, bacteria, microbes. That's good for our body. And not only that. When we stand, you know, here on the surface of this planet, we are exposed to a lot of cosmic radiations. You probably heard about Hartmann grids, Curie's grids, Schneider grids. There is underground natural radioactivity, and it all attack our body. So our body cells fight the enemy. And when we enter to the tunnels and measure the presence of Hartmann, Curie's, and Schneider's grids, the results were zero, no negative radiations. So you have a place with a high concentration of negative ions, no negative radiations. So our body cells, instead of fighting that enemy from the outside, they can do their job. And their job is to balance our body energies, our body organs. So this complex underground is basically self-healing complex, the complex where people would go and regenerate themselves, revitalize in place. So these big complexes of pyramids and tunnels, they are not built for the dead people, but for the living communities.
That's very fascinating, Dr. Sam. And I remember when we were there with you in Bosnia, you had mentioned to us on the side that perhaps the builders of these pyramids and tunnels were not surface dwellers, that perhaps they lived underground. Do you have evidence of this?
Now, as you could see, when you enter those tunnels, After first 10 feet and after first 3,000 feet, you can breathe normally. The air circulation is there. How did they do it? You could see also that some of the tunnels, they are kind of very narrow, you know, 3 foot high. Some of them are up to 12 or 13 feet in height. By different heights of the ceiling and on the long run, it would look like a sinusoid. You know, it goes up, then goes back down, it goes up, it goes down. So basically with the different heights, we know that in the areas where it is a lower ceiling, you have a higher pressure. Basically the air pressure is stronger, you know, the pressure pushes the air stronger. And then it is weaker with higher ceiling, it's stronger, weaker, stronger, weaker. And that way you are getting some type of the natural fan, natural circulation. Since we have hundreds of tunnels, we have hundreds of fans, so the air circulates perfectly. It's genius of the builders. But another thing that you could notice was, of course, those people, they did not have light or light bulbs or electricity, but we don't see any traces of any device. How did they light up the place? We don't know. So it means that if they have the whole underground town with the, you know, tunnels and chambers and intersections and the water accumulation, they had to have, you know, a means to move in the labyrinth. And, you know, today we have our eyes, but we are on the surface. If those people are living underground, probably they developed some other senses. We know the bat, they have, you know, different way of moving to the space. So it seems that either the environment was different 10,000 plus years ago, maybe because of the cosmic radiations or the wars or the danger on the surface, but it seems that they did, you know, use some other physical senses.
Do you feel, Dr. Sam, that these were human beings or perhaps some other species?
I would say they were very intelligent beings with a great knowledge of the engineering, because they built the underground labyrinth 70 feet under the surface. In order to do that, you have to know the engineering. You know, they had the air circulation much better than we have in our coal mining facilities. You know, they have underground waters. You are able to see some of the waters. There is a very nice a small blue lake. And we analyzed the water from the, you know, from the lake and from some other tunnels. And what would you expect from the water after thousands of years is that it is full of microbes and things like that. But when we did the microbiological analysis and chemical analysis, we got the results back. And they said that the water is drinkable. How is it possible after so much time? Well, because of the high concentration of negative ions. They keep the atmosphere very clean. And not only that, they make that water healing water. So those, you know, beings, people, they were very smart.
Yes, yes. When we were climbing up and down the pyramid of the sun, of the moon actually, we noticed that there were some, the parts of the step pyramid were uncovered and we could see the stones and how they were interlocked very intelligently. Is it one of your goals sometime in the future to completely uncover those pyramids so that they're totally exposed to the atmosphere?
Well, that would be ideal scenario. But you have to know that we deal with the largest pyramidal structures on the planet. So in order to clean, let's say, the Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun, I would need 3,000 people for 3 to 5 years and about $40 to $50 million. Now, I run a non-profit foundation called Archaeological Park Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun Foundation. And of course, you know, we do our work only through donations. And during the recession and bad times, you know, the culture and archaeology is the last thing, you know, on a politician's mind. But despite that, you know, what we do every summer, we organize international summer camp for volunteers. So last year, I had 500 volunteers and 45 archaeologists from all over the world, from 30 different countries and 5 continents. So that made us the most active archaeological site in the world. This year I'm expecting volunteers to come from 42 countries and 6 continents. So, you know, Bosnia, you mentioned, it's a little country, GPS does not work there. You know, 20 years ago we had the war here. But, you know, that's how people know Bosnia. The war, the violence, the war criminals, late days, you know, they know it as a country of corruption, all bad things. Now we want to change that. With this project, we are bringing archaeologists, we are bringing volunteers, we work on archaeology and cultural heritage, we bring tourists, we are sending positive vibrations to the world, and we want to keep it that way. This discovery is changing the world history as we know it. I mean, it is huge, and it will make us to rethink our position on other pyramids in the world.
There's a theory out there that humankind has evolved and died off and gotten to extremely advanced points of technology before, and perhaps the cycle's actually repeated itself perhaps even a couple of times. And what we're dealing with is a remnants of when humankind had far greater knowledge of science, and we're just now trying to catch up to where we were.
I agree with that. Of course, there are some differences. We think if the people of the past did not have computers and internet and cranes, they are not developed like we are. And we are wrong. We are not most technologically advanced. We are not the most intelligent. We are not the most beautiful beings who lived on this planet. Before us, there are people who were much ahead of us in certain areas, in astronomy, you know, in construction, especially on the spiritual end. We have become 100% materialistic beings who rely on our physical senses. In the past, it was different. People would have a balance between physical and spiritual. In order to understand and define the pyramids, we need to view them through the physical, energy, and spiritual aspects. People who come on the top of the Sun Pyramid, people who go to our tunnels, they can feel some strange energy sensations. They are receiving information from the past. Of course, it all depends on, you know, how sensitive the people are. But, you know, we are having certain phenomena that cannot be explained just using our, you know, instruments or using our mainstream scientific views and the disciplines. So we need to open ourselves.
I agree, Dr. Salmon. When we were there, we could feel the energy and we could sense the ancient history, and the group that we were with actually did a mental scan, and we could feel the energy at the center of the pyramids and the energy going up into the atmosphere. And we felt that the beings who built this were extremely ancient. You know, maybe the pyramids are maybe over 40 or 50,000 years old.
And we'll have to get into more of this after the break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're going ape with Stuart and Janet Swerdlow and our very special guest, Dr. Sam Osmanagich, talking about an 800-foot pyramid they've discovered in Bosnia. And we'll be right back. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. There's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to hide because there's probably a pyramid near you. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. You know, broadcasting live from the future, from the top of the archaeologically incredible monolith called AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And my very special guest here is Dr. Osmanagich and the Swerdlows from expansions.com. Welcome back, everybody. Now, dimensions. let's draw some comparisons here. The most famous pyramids in the world is obviously the Great Pyramid of Giza. How big is that versus how big this underground pyramid that's basically just had layers of topsoil thrown all over it? How big is that?
The Giza pyramids, the biggest one, 480 feet. The Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun, 700 feet.
Okay. So,
yeah. And Dr. Osmanagic, do you feel that some of the ancient pyramids, the original ones built by these ancient cultures, do you feel like there is some type of energetic or even physical connection between them?
Well, first of all, I think that the pyramids were built as some type of the machines, energy machines. They are constructions, they are structures. We can see the concrete, we can see the blocks, we can see the shape of the pyramid. But let's see, what did they use them for? In the case of Bosnian pyramids, we know that there are three different types of energy produced by the pyramids. The first one is the energy beam that goes to the very top of the pyramid, and it has a frequency of 28 kilohertz. It can be measured by anyone. The second type of the energy is the energy flow within the pyramid. And we know about those flows for 60 years now. And that energy flow really affects our molecular structure. It improves it. And the third type of the pyramid is the one that goes off the pyramid in concentric circles, affecting the crops and the whole societies. But that's one aspect, that's the energy aspect. But then when you have a very strong energy source, with energy you can do anything you want. I mean, you can do the communication thing, not only on this planet, but more than that. Then, you know,
there's a couple of things that are occurring to me now. You know how oil companies, when they're drilling for oil on land, they do fracking, and they have these fracking sites where they punch through and they try to break up kind of the ground in many, many different spots over large areas in order to get all the oil out and that kind of thing. That's something that occurs to me, that these pyramids may have been some description of ancient sort of energy drawing source or something of that nature. And another thing that occurs to me is possibly aerial markers. You know how we've got control towers and things like that at the airports? What's more prominent to a pilot than a gargantuan 700 freaking foot pyramid?
Yeah, that's a very good option. But also, when you have the source of energy, you can manipulate the climate. When you have such powerful energy source, you have a good weapons in your hand. When you have powerful energy source, you can manipulate time and space. And you mentioned the drilling in the oil and gas industry. I mean, when you are able to deal with the powerful energies, that's much more superior to our mechanical devices. I mean, if you go back to Nikola Tesla...
Well, in fact, that was what I was going to say next, is that fracking kind of damages the earth in order to get its resources out of it. But there's other ways where you actually position objects in similar ways, and they allow a magnetic field to bounce around the earth, which can be captured and used via wireless aerials to give electricity to anything, to any object.
Okay, now you came to a very important thing. All our lives, as the community, as the human society, we basically fight to get the energy source. Today we are using oil, gas, thermo, nuclear, hydropower, and so on. But in the past, people were having different means to get the energy they needed. If you look at the Bosnian pyramids, now we can see that it still works. Maybe not like in the original times, but it's been working because the energy is being produced. So, in other words, we have, for over 10,000 years, 10,000 plus years, we have energy machine that's been around us. So the ancient people started the machine and it's still been working. So it's some type of the perpetual model. Now, when you have the energy that's coming from the pyramid, and then you can measure the strength of the energy, and that's what we did. On the surface, you know, the strength was, you know, certain number. But then 10 feet above, the strength was stronger, it was higher. The other 10 feet, it was even stronger. What does it mean? I mean, it contradicts our physical laws. It contradicts our type of technology, which we can call Hertzian technology, which says the closer to the source, the stronger the energy, you move away, it's getting weaker. But in the case of Bayesian pyramid, it's opposite.
So sounds to me very similar to how electrogravitics has worked. The Lear Corporation did a bit of research on this back in the day, and they were able to put some energy into a couple of discs and make them levitate. And the more energy they put in, exponentially more power was produced by the discs. And so when you go up further, it produces more and more power, just like you're saying.
Well, excellent. Now, what we can call this, it's a non-Hertzian technology. The first guy who experimented with this type of technology was Nikola Tesla. You know, 120 years ago, I mean, the guy was born just a couple of hundred miles from Bayesian pyramids. But when he came to States, 120 years ago, he was doing some experiments in his lab in Colorado Springs. And he designed so-called Tesla's coil, and he was able to move the energy wirelessly in his lab, which is about 55 feet long. And then before they burned down his lab, he did an experiment. He was using his Tesla coil, sending the energy to ionosphere, and using that as the unlimited source of the energy. The energy came back much, much stronger, and he lit up 20,000 homes in Colorado Springs. So for the first time, we had a guy who came up with a free energy, unlimited source, and wireless energy. Now, did the corporation use that to advance that for the, you know, human benefits? Of course they did not. For them, it was much more profitable to build thermal, hydro, nuclear powers, you know, power plants, to build all these cables and to sell us the energy for a lot of money. That's what the profit economy is based on. Because if you have the free energy, you have the base for free society. All you need is free flow of information, free knowledge. And of course, elites don't want that.
That's correct. That's correct. And, you know, Tesla also, when he had his laboratory in the southern part of Manhattan in New York City, he generated enough energy to create a small earthquake that actually started to destroy the buildings in the area. And they had to destroy the equipment in order to stop the earthquake from destroying New York City. And so, yeah. And so I was also thinking, you know, looking at the pyramids at Giza, what we see on the surface, that four-sided pyramid, my opinion is that there is also an equal pyramid underneath the ground, so that in effect it's an octahedron, which in effect would be a delta T antenna, and would generate interdimensional energies.
Or what if they're on the opposite sides of the Earth perfectly and can channel an energy signature through the core of the Earth?
Well, that's perfect. And I was also wondering if perhaps the Bosnian pyramids, if Dr. Sam thought maybe what we see above may also exist underneath in a reciprocal manner.
It has to be the case with all original pyramids. I mean, what's above the ground is just half of the machine. And yes. I witnessed the same thing in China when I spoke to one of their most distinguished archaeologists, Chao Zafan, and basically he told me the same thing. Under one of their biggest pyramids, there is another one underground. So obviously, you know, beings in the past, they knew how to work with the energy. They knew that the shape of the pyramid, actually just half of the machine, but the shape of the pyramid is the most beneficial as far as the energy producing. And the second shape is the sphere. And that's the reason why we have so many stone spheres If you put them in concentration, like in Costa Rica, Western Mexico, Easter Island, Bosnia, and you're finding those stone spheres on 20 different locations in Bosnia, then you have also a very powerful energy source. This is a type of knowledge that the ancients have. Like I said, they did not have computers, but they knew our planet better. They knew the energy flows, the positive, the negative spots, the underground waters, and they knew how to put those stuff together.
I have a quick question for you, too. When I was in the tunnels, it was just such an incredible experience. And one of the things that you had talked about was that you felt the tunnels were purposefully closed off. And I had one of my people pose the question to me, is it possible that they also buried the outside of the pyramid to keep people from finding them for whatever reason, perhaps when they abandoned them at some point in time?
But we'll have to talk about that after the break. But incidentally, they're telling people to cover up their houses with soil to save them from the radiation. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show is going to ensure we're very lucky indeed to still have our fabulous guests, the Sword Lows, and Dr. Sam Osmanagat. I have to keep that written down. It'll sink in eventually, Sam. Anyway, welcome back.
Yeah, what I'd like to continue with is a little bit of the discussion we had in the break, because we were talking about perhaps the pyramids were at one time underwater. And Dr. Sam, what I would like to ask you is that we have been told that there are pyramids on the bottom of the Great Lakes here in the North American continent. Have you heard of such things, or has your research brought this to your attention in any way?
Now, you are going to tell me more about that pyramid under the Great Lake. What I do know is that we do have pyramidal structure, like in the shape of the step pyramids, on the bottom of the Pacific floor, namely between the islands of Yonaguni in Japan and Taiwan and China, mainland China. 13 underwater cities have been discovered in the last 15 years. They are at a depth from 100 to 250 feet. Obviously, at one point in time, they were on the surface. So when was the last time when the Pacific Ocean rose for 200 feet, 50 feet? It was 12,500 years ago, with the end of the last ice age. Huge quantities of ice melted from the northern Asia, Europe, and North America. That water got in the seas and the oceans, and the water level rose. So Pacific Ocean at the bottom over there is one such place. Another one, Caribbean, around the island of Cuba, a lot of underwater pyramids. Unfortunately, the government there, for the longest time, has not let anyone, you know, investigate those. We are hoping that in the near future we should be able to learn more about them. And of course, in the middle of the Atlantic, I think the time will show that we have some pyramids there on bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. Now, tell me about those pyramids in the Great Lakes.
Well, actually, there is a pyramid formed in lakes underneath Michigan and also in Wisconsin that have been verified by scientists. You can actually dive down in these lakes and see the pyramids where they were once above sea level. And in fact, in the northern part of Michigan, there are copper mines that are over 5,000 years old and are so deep and deeply excavated that we don't even have the technology today to replicate those mines. And so my opinion is that, and apparently there's been over 1 billion tons of copper removed, and nobody knows where it is. So it's my opinion that, and I don't know how this fits into your theories, but you mentioned 12,000 years ago, I believe that there were continents in the Atlantic and the Pacific that through some cataclysm did sink to what became the oceans, and that these pyramids are remnants of the civilizations that existed, and perhaps the survivors of those civilizations went to places like Bosnia and China and India, etc., to build replications of their cities and with their technologies. And so perhaps that is what we're finding now, or you are finding in Bosnia and in other places.
Well, you're right about the copper. We know that in Michigan, probably about 5 to 7 million tons of copper were removed, probably over 7,000 years ago, 7,000 plus years ago. Now, we cannot find such huge quantity of copper tools or artifacts or anything in the surrounding areas. Very little. I mean, it's so minor that it's insignificant. Where did the copper go? So that's a very good question. It's who had the technology to, you know, produce so much best quality copper, and who knew that the copper there is 99.99% right. Clean? I mean, amazing.
That's right, right.
And also, what's interesting too here in Michigan is actually in some of our local museums, they actually say that the copper mines were over 80 stories underground. And they say that there's no way that they today can create anything 80 stories underground safely. And in fact, in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, people up there say that the ground still shakes. And they say that is because of the instability left over because of all the copper that was taken out of these mines.
So a lot of questions to be answered. Now, there is another one I'd like to bring up. In the southwestern parts of the state of Illinois, there are 200 Cahokia pyramids. And when I was there, I spoke to the many archaeologists, and unfortunately, whatever they teach us about those pyramids is wrong. First of all, they call the city the Sun City. We don't know its real name. They call this park Cahokia State Park. Cahokia are the minor Indian tribe from the 17th century, and the pyramids were built much, much before that. Then they call those pyramids mounds. Now, mounds is really underestimation. Mounds are built from the soil, but these are the structures. You can see four different types of materials, sandstone, blocks, pebbles, sand, and what they would do in order to cover the pyramids, they would cut the grass with the soil. They would cut the squares, they would place them upside down on the pyramid. And imagine what? In order to build the biggest one, which they called Monk's Mound, they used the equivalent of 226,000 trucks of material, 20 tons trucks and trailers. 226,000, that's huge. Plus, they built 200 pyramids, not one. And instead of expecting the American scientific community and all archaeologists from the U.S. go there to figure out how they build them, what was the purpose, who, I mean, they don't even touch them. They were telling them they cannot get the permits, it's very expensive, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's amazing. We have such a valuable thing on the U.S. soil, and we do nothing about it. My son in Houston never learned a word about it in his history books. That's a shame. I mean, just because it does not belong to the white European settlers doesn't mean that it is not valuable. It is very valuable. Now, you see, All 200 pyramids are oriented towards the north, the cosmic north, all by one. The biggest
one. Well, when you say the cosmic north, you mean that it's not magnetic northern north?
Not exactly. It's a northern star. And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I said all by one. And the biggest one is oriented towards the magnetic north. Now, some people know that the cosmic north is fixed, but the magnetic north moves. Now it moves about 25 miles every year between Canada and Siberia.
No, that's not true. It's just been updated. It's now moving 40 miles a year.
Well, it was 42 kilometers, you know, the last thing I read. But
42 kilometers. Sorry. Yeah, that was the one.
About 25 miles.
My bad.
Yeah, 1,000 years, it was moving like 6 miles a year. Of course, what we do, the great damage we do to the planet, that's the reason why, it's acting so hectically. But the point is, those who knew the difference between the cosmic north and magnetic north were not Indian tribes. They were very advanced civilizations. Those who were using hundreds of thousands of trucks of material, they were not primitive Indian tribes, like they suggest us at the museum, at the site, and they are saying it was built by the tribes. The tribe does not have a social organization or engineering skills or the knowledge to build something like that.
Yeah, I think what's so amazing is amongst all the work that you're doing, you are really saying scientifically about all the history that is hidden right in front of us. And as you're saying, the frustration that it must be for people like yourself to be able to have permission to bring this to the public, because it's right here, we want it, we crave it, but yet it's being hidden in front of us and people are accepting that blindly.
Well, you're right. But, you know, our destiny is in our hands. We change ourselves, we start changing our environment. We start bringing the stuff independently. Then, you know, people will start accepting it. If it is based, you mentioned scientifically based, and of course I'm much more open, not just the mainstream science, but my coordinates are not so narrow. Of course, we have to apply all our knowledge that we have in order to understand those ancient structures, and so much to learn from the ancients. So much knowledge, you know, has been forgotten. Like in our case, let's say in the case of Bosnian pyramids, you know, the concrete that covers the Bosnian pyramid of the sun is 2 to 3 times of better quality than our modern concretes in 21st century. And it's measurable. You know, we make concrete which is in the range from 10 to 40 megapascals. That's the hardness. And this concrete on the Sun Pyramid is from 67 to 134 megapascals. I mean, you can see that people in the past, they had a better knowledge of those natural materials, how to put it together. And, you know, they applied certain formulas that we lost over the time. So much to learn from the past. And much of that knowledge we can apply in our present in order to avoid what we do to Mother Nature and to our Mother Earth.
Well, it's a lot like I always say, in the end, everything goes back to the beginning.
Exactly.
Well, let me ask you this question, and it's kind of an odd question, but do you feel that all of this technology information that these ancient people had, could it possibly have come from other worlds that were brought here and taught to these people, or perhaps the people themselves were brought here from elsewhere?
Of course it could. It's an option. We have to consider it. And if we think that we are alone in the universe, then there is something seriously wrong with us.
Exactly. I mean, there's transformers on the moon after all.
Well, you know, it even crosses my mind as well. I kind of posed it a little bit earlier, but you're talking about the people who closed up these tunnels. Perhaps the builders at some point recognized that there was going to be some kind of catastrophe or whatever, and they are the ones that the actual builders perhaps closed them up, and perhaps they went off world and left it so that they would not be abused by people who didn't know what they were doing. I mean, there's so many things, places where your mind can go with the possibilities.
Well, you know, I think that if you're talking about like an ancient culture that's at a point where it's understanding that it's nearing its end because of their technology, perhaps, they would try to leave warnings for their descendants. Is there any form of warning that these old buried pyramids have for the human race today?
Well, you see, we in 21st century and the last century also, we were able to go through the hypnotic regressions to the previous times, to the previous lives. Of course, we can do the opposite. We can do the hypnotic progression and we can go and visit the future. Of course, if we can do that, the people who are the human beings or the beings who were much more spiritually advanced than us, they could achieve that much more easily, and they could, you know, go through the time, past and the future. So they were able to see, you know, what's going to happen and if it makes sense to make this technology available to beings like us. I mean, the history of humankind in the last 8,000 years is the history of wars. We've had 15,000 wars. The last 150 years is the history of exponential.
A little bit of an interference in the background there.
Which is fine. We like that. So, in the last 150 years, you know, we went from 1.5 billion people on this planet to 7 billion people as we have them today. So, what we do, we don't have a strategy. Our demographic is catastrophic. And in the last 150 years, we managed to remove 50% of all animals and plants from this planet just to, you know, make sure that we have enough food. So obviously there is something seriously wrong with us. So who would give such a powerful energy sources in our hands? We are still not there. We are not mature enough.
Well, that's very interesting. Go ahead.
If we're not mature enough, does that mean the ancient cultures, that they felt that the human race needed to be shepherded under them as children who needed to be commanded and instructed?
Yes, there are lots to learn for us. And then it's really up to us. I mean, there is nobody that should help us. Probably there is something who's been helping us, guiding us. But, you know, 7,000 years. When Sumer started, Sumerians were like the first advanced civilization in this cycle. What we could see was that they did not start from the beginning. There was no like evolutionary way for them. But they simply started from very high point. I mean, they had everything. The political regime, the law, the economy, astronomy, math. Like somebody brought the knowledge from the outside and told them, hey, this is the way you are going to organize your society, and let's see what you're going to do with that. And somebody left. And what's been happening ever since, 7,000, 6,000, 5,000 years, I mean, this state simply collapsed because without the guidance, they were not able, you know, to stay on the top. I mean, 7,000 years ago.
And we'll have to be talking about this 7,000 years after the break. And we'll be I'm not sure the break will take 7,000 years, but almost as long. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, on the FamilySportsShow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're jamming a big ancient key into a crusty old stone lock and making a giant pyramid turn into some description of massive spacecraft that's going to fly off and, I don't know, start some description of alien colony somewhere else. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And I wanted to know what your perspective was, Dr. Sam Osmanigic from Bosnia, who's discovered this recent massive freaking pyramid. What do you make of a lot of these new movies, like there's these Transformers movies and whatnot, where they talk about the pyramids being this giant energy harvester that they shoot at the sun in order to extract a particular form of energy? And in the new one, apparently there's some form of ancient culture living on the moon and all of this kind of stuff. And our whole civilization was all started by ancient robots and this kind of stuff. Is there any plausibility to that type of Hollywood fanciful idea?
I'm not sure about the robots, but I think as far as the energy, they are coming to some senses now. Yes.
Well, that's very interesting there. So they're putting this stuff out in the movies here for everybody kind of to see. And I don't know. There's been a lot of talk recently about some forms of alien disclosure, and the UN has appointed their alien ambassador. So if somebody comes to Earth in some giant golden chariot from the sky, spinning around a giant disc, and says, "Take me to your leader," they're going to show her this little astrophysicist chick from Malaysia. And she'll speak on behalf of the UN for all of humanity. How about them apples? And apparently there's just been a massive light show and stuff above London. I think this happened a couple of hours ago or a day ago or something like that. There's a whole bunch of really interesting things being discovered and lots of interesting occurrences going on at this particular point in time. Not to mention this new Transformers movie, which I saw last night, The Dark of the Moon, was released on a new moon here in New Zealand on the exact date. I'm sure that was just a coincidence, though.
You know, I'm curious, Dr. Osmanigic, about how you actually found the tunnels system itself, because looking on the map that I have in your book, it looks like it's quite a ways from the Pyramid of the Sun. How exactly did you discover where those tunnels began? How did you know where to dig?
With the help of the Transformers.
Well, absolutely. You know, it was Shovelotron.
When I first came to Visoko in central Bosnia, discovered the first two pyramids. Based on my experience with Egyptian pyramids, Mexican and Chinese, I knew that the underground tunnels have to be somewhere. You know, in Egypt, in Saqqara, under one pyramid, the Step Pyramid in Saqqara, there is a huge underground labyrinth, about 6 miles radius. The tunnels are under Giza Pyramid, the tunnels are under Chinese or Mexican Pyramid. So I said, we have to find the underground labyrinth under the Bosnian Pyramids, and I wrote that in my first book about the discovery of Bosnian Pyramids. And of course, you know, the cultural educational establishment attacked me. They were saying, oh, what he's talking about? It's impossible. What kind of network of tunnels? Well, I spoke to a lot of locals, and especially kids, asking them, are there any caves, any tunnels, things like that. So I was checking different places. So I finally found this entrance to what's now called the underground labyrinth Ravne. And it was very narrow. It was about a couple of feet. So, you know, you had to crawl until, you know, you get inside. And it's about 60, 70 feet long, very narrow tunnel. But when I saw the ceiling, which was half-circled, I said, well, this is artificially made tunnel. We started cleaning it, putting the wooden support, and as we were, you know, enlarging it, then we found the wall to the left, another wall to the right, and we found the tunnel to the left, to the right, and then we discovered the huge network of tunnels. So, you know, it was rather slow process, But then the discovery was there, and now we know that the huge network is there. What we cleaned so far, what you saw the other day, was probably about 2 to 3% of the huge labyrinth. So, you know,
How far is that, do you estimate, from the Pyramid of the Sun?
From the entrance to the pyramid is a little bit less than 2 miles. Okay. So it's approximately 1.8 miles. Mm-hmm. And so far, we have cleaned and secured about 600 yards, which is about 20% of the way from the entrance of the pyramid. So if we continue this pace, and we have to remove all this, you know, fill up material, it will take us maybe another 15 to 20 years to get under the pyramid. But don't forget, sometimes archaeology is very slow. You have to be very patient. Maybe eventually we're going to find some, you know, free empty sections, empty from this fill up material, and we're going to go proceed, you know, much quicker. So I'm hoping to see such development. But even if we have to wait 20 years, I mean, you know, like a Chinese proverb says, I mean, the road of 1,000 miles starts with the first few steps, and that's what we've been doing.
I have a strong feeling that exactly what you said is going to happen. I do believe that there are open tunnels under there that you will find and will get you into that pyramid much, much faster. And I also believe that with the worldwide interest, that one way or another, with your team of volunteers that you're pulling together, and with the mind pattern that you have and the attitude, that you will continue to see your discovery be opened up to the world, because what you're doing is so important, it cannot not happen.
Have you experienced any kind of, archaeological industry-type sabotage to the project trying to unearth this pyramid?
Well, nobody talked to me directly, but they were trying to, you know, remove some of my associates, a lot of pressure, you know, a lot of work behind the scene when it comes to the permits, money, boycott in media, and our way to UNESCO to help us. So we can see that on all four fronts, there are some very strong and powerful dark forces working against us. But, you know, there are some other forces. So, you know, we continue to do what we've been doing, and I'm sure we are going to be successful in the future also. And with those words, you know, I would like to thank you guys for having me on your show. It was really a pleasure. And I was glad to see, you know, you over there in Bosnia. I invite all others to come there. And I'll be really happy to talk to you guys again in the near future.
Thank you, Dr. Sam. We so appreciate you taking the time that late at night in Bosnia to speak with us. And we do hope we'll speak to you again in the near future on the show.
All right. Good luck and God bless.
Thank you, and good night.
Now, before you go, Dr. Sam, would you be able to, do you have a website where people would be able to see some videos or hear some more interviews or have a look at some of the research that you've done on this project? Go ahead and plug away.
Yeah, the easiest way is just to, you know, search under the Bosnian pyramids. Our official website is BosnianPyramidOfTheSun.com, BosnianPyramidOfTheSun.com, and they can check our daily news and, you know, what we do there, a lot of video clips, the volunteers, the new, you know, discoveries, but also on the YouTube, it's a lot of material there. Okay, good luck. Bye-bye then.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Sam Osmanagic, and I believe that we still have about 7 minutes left in the segment or so, and we're trying to bring up Sherry Kane and Len Horowitz for the remainder of the show, but as I understand it, Stuart and Janet, you in fact have yourselves an important conference to get to, so
we
can say goodbye to ye too.
Yes, thank you. We're already half hour late, but it was worth it.
Yeah, we're so happy that we've had a chance to visit and bring this information out to people, and we plan to bring his books and DVDs to our audience through our website in the very near future. So I want to thank everyone. Please visit our site, expansions.com. It was a pleasure, Vinny, and please say hello to Lenny and Sherry for us.
All right, fantastic. And we'll have you guys on every Friday, first hour, right here on the Vinny Eastwood Show for the Attention Planet Earth Going Ape section. And Sherry Kane and Lynn Horowitz usually joining us in for second hour, but they're actually a little bit late today, but it doesn't worry. But anyway, Swerdlows, thank you very, very freaking much for turning up and being so fabulous and drawing in a marvelous guest with an incredible story of some freaking gigantic pyramid that's under a whole bunch of feet of soil in the middle of freaking Bosnia, of all places. Yeah, I did not see that one coming, although I'm not surprised.
Well, it's our pleasure to freak you out.
Yeah. And Bosnia is an amazingly beautiful country. You're just so incredible there.
Yep, I'm sure. One of my friends, a rapper called Genocide, he's from Bosnia, and he has some interesting memories of his town getting shot up during a mass genocide, that kind of thing. So That's something that happens when a lot of countries, especially Balkan states, they just kind of get demonized and placated as this sort of dangerous, warlike place in the movies. But, you know, the reality is most places in the world, even if they've had war there before or not, are just beautiful places full of beautiful people.
That's true. It's a beautiful country, and I do recommend that people go there and visit.
That's right. And you can book your tickets, ladies and gentlemen, to travelbosnia.com. And that's one of Slobodan Milosevic's former shell companies. But never mind. We're all good. Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, we'll leave you to your next guest. It was a pleasure again.
All right.
We must get on to ours.
All right. See you later, guys.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Right, there they go, the Swerdlows. Well, you know, Fridays, ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to get into, what's it called? Transformers 3. Janet Stewart, you can just press the little red hang-up button on your Skype there now, if you like. I went to see that last night, and, yeah, spoiler alert for anybody who doesn't want to know, it was pretty freaking awesome. I've got to say. However, 3D glasses, and this is an interesting little mind control pattern thing we were talking about here in the chat room earlier, is that there's a heck of a lot of really scary aspects to the whole mind control techniques that get used on everybody. I mean, televisions were designed specifically so that you can't fully process the images with a fully conscious mind. And now we've got these 3D glasses, and I watched this movie in 3D, and it ruined it. Not because it wasn't really fantastic and absorbing, but because halfway through this 2.5 hour extravaganza of action and whatnot, your eyes started to hurt. And towards the very end of the movie, my eyes couldn't stop watering, and they couldn't stop watering for a good half hour afterwards. I mean, it just really, really hurts your eyes quite a lot. And I don't know, I think I'm resolving to like not see anything in 3D no more, man. It's just not worth it. The experience gets ruined by the fact that you're focusing on how much your eyes are in pain while you're watching the freaking film. You know, how upsetting is that? And goodness knows what kind of crap can be implanted in your brain if you can't perceive the freaking reality as it stands on the screen. Oh, goodness. I have no idea exactly how all this works, but I do know that my eyes still hurt a little bit from last night. That's not a good thing. I don't care what planet you're from, watching a film and then having your eyes hurt for ages afterwards is not pleasant. The film, however,
focuses and centers around, as every single freaking film does, somebody who was posing as the savior of the Autobots actually working with the enemy, who incidentally were also a whole bunch of rich guys, as their accountants, collectors, billionaires, etc., all working for the Decepticons, who treat the human race and call us insects. There is a very interesting thing when you watch Hollywood movies, when you know about conspiracy theories and ancient technologies and suppressed stuff and all of that kind of jazz. You know, it brings an extra element into movies, I believe. And usually we have Sherry Kane and Lynn Horowitz coming on the show here to give us a movie review once in a while. And we should be able to have them up after the break. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Back in a moment. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's all about gang stalking on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guests, Lenny Horowitz and Sherry Kane. My pet names for them are Robin Boy and Batgirl. And because
What happened to
Horror Kane? Oh, yeah, that's right, Horror Kane. Have you ever seen that movie, The Princess Bride, Lenny?
No, uh-uh.
Oh, it's great. There's this little sequence in it where he's got a little thing of poison powder, and he puts it in a wine goblet, and he says, "This is a test of wit. Which goblet is poisoned? You drink your goblet, and then we'll see who's standing at the end." And the guy switches the goblet when he's not looking. And he laughs at him and he says, "Ah, ha, 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 we're all sweet as." And as he's laughing, he dies. And the and then the woman asks him, "How is it that you knew that you didn't have the poisoned one?" And he says, "They were both poisoned." And the powder that he used was called iocane powder. And it made me think of horrocane powder, you know, odorless, tasteless, and is one of the most deadly substances known to the pharmaceutical industry.
It is.
Very good.
That's an incredibly obscure connection, I'm sure. Maybe I'm just grafting and grasping at straws here. But tell us what gang stalking is, because as soon as I've started having you guys on the show here, each time we upload the YouTube videos, we get masses of attacks of people, you know, calling in Knights and Bolter and, you know, "Vinny, you've got to watch this. You need to not ally with those Zionist stooges." I mean, Lenny. Are you a Zionist?
I mean, gang stalking is very serious. I mean, it happens to a lot of whistleblowers, all whistleblowers probably, and it escalates over time. They turn out blacklisting you. They try to silence you. And then they go into also trying to target your family, but not in the sense of maybe not threatening them, but actually influencing them.
Yeah, it's like group harassment. So there's a bunch of guys out there that now we have. Actually, Vinny, you may want to join. There's several of us. There's six of us now that are very likely to file a class action lawsuit against the perpetrators. And apparently the CIA COINTELPRO will be named in the suit. We'll name certain parties in the suit, but also you'll have John Doe's as defendants, along with the Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI. But I do have to give credit. You always have us on Fridays, and we greatly appreciate it. It's an honor for us to join you. And there's always something new happening in our lives. I want people out there to know, for the first time in the last, 10 weeks, when we've been petitioning the FBI to kind of like wake up and give us a break and help out and at least give us a name of somebody on the inside that's actually investigating these matters. We actually got a call the other day and this morning had a discussion with, I'm not going to mention the name of the agent, but hallelujah, there is apparently a nice guy within the FBI who understands what we're going through and has been assigned to investigate the persecution that we, as well as the others in this group of six, have been facing. So again, you know, it's, I said immediately to him, you've got to have internal affairs involved, because there's obviously agents that were at least one time associated with FBI, and that it's appropriate to have somebody in internal affairs be engaged in the investigation. So that's the breaking news here on Friday, July 1st. Happy July 4th, and happy, I don't know, I guess you guys celebrate in New Zealand, your 4th of July? I don't think so, huh?
No. In fact, there's probably an awful lot of real American-hating commies out there that are, like, burning U.S. flags as we speak. No, I'm just joking. It's... what do you think, Lenny, when we get to a point you're fighting and you're trying to save people's lives by getting them out information that they need, doing the research that the mainstream media is not doing, and instead of saying, hey, thanks, man, thank you very much. I mean, a lot of people do say that, but other people, they sort of decide that nitpicking and abusing you and using really vile language and being aggressive when they don't even know you and have never talked to you before in their lives is the best way to go about it.
Yeah, I think that they seek to discredit first. I think that's their main objection is, I mean, a main actually agenda is to discredit people that are actually doing something to stir it up, to really get people to think, because the idea is the mainstream media doesn't want you to think. They want to manipulate your mind into believing in a certain biased viewpoint. And then if you don't believe that, then you're considered a domestic terrorist. And people like that need to be watched, according to, you know, people within the rogue parts of the government, rogue divisions of the government. So they send these criminals out, get out of jail card free criminals, which a lot of them are. Some of them are not. Some of them are even just CIA flunkies who.
Yeah, but that's it. They're not very smart at all.
They're not.
Most of these guys are really dumb. So that
CIA is, flunkies.
Yeah, flunkies. Yeah. And when you say that you have been attacked and emailed by people who use commonly four letter words to express themselves, that shows you the mentality that they play to. And that sadly and sickly relates to their socioeconomic, political, and mental status. These guys are losers. And what they've been hired to do is target market to losers. And what they do is they generate within the losers' minds anti-American, anti-Illuminati, anti-Jew, anti-Christian, anti-Muslim, anti-everything. And that's how they shake it up, mix it up, divide the sheeple to conquer the flock.
That's how, I think you get kind of touched on something there that made me trigger a thought. They try to make people anti, so that way they become really negative people to
exactly.
be around,
exactly.
and they achieve nothing positive.
And they achieve something tremendously positive for the profiteers off of humanity's suffering. That's why we have a military state. They generate conflict, and they maintain the conflict through this COINTELPRO mind control, social engineering, conditioning. And that makes big money. And that's why, you know, Jesus said, you know, you can take a wise man and a rich man, and how do you get them through the eye of a needle? Well, you know, it's kind of hard if you've got the wisdom of Solomon to push a fat, you know, slob who's a greedy Illuminati character through the whole transition of changing into a loving being who's able to gift humanity instead of curse humanity. I mean, it's a psychosocial spiritual warfare
And this is the ground level, the grassroots level that you are talking about. When they email you and these guys, again, think about it. What do they do with their lives? I mean, is this their life? Are they making a living off of wasting their time sending, hurling you four-letter words and defaming you?
Yeah, like
they talk about how I don't know, you're scum or you're trash or your opinion doesn't mean anything or you're a loser or whatever. And the fact of the matter is they don't actually get out there and do anything. It's one of my listeners came up with a very interesting term. Keyboard warriors.
Yes,
exactly. That's part of the gang stalking, cyber gang stalking. That's what they, you know,
that's it.
They attack us and they do it and they don't know us. They really are just sent to destroy. And some of them may even think that they're doing good. They may have been told, according to when you read this gang stalking article that I just sent you, Vinny, you'll see that some of these people actually think they're doing good. They think that they were told that we're actually really bad people, or the people they're supposed to attack are enemies of the government. So we deserve to be attacked. And so they justify it. They say, well, why don't you respect us? We're military folks. You know, when you go against the government, you're not respecting the government. So you should be attacked. And that's a lot of their mindset.
That falls into his agenda.
I was going to say, Len, that it involves people who should know better.
Yes, you know? We should.
If somebody throws some crazy accusation or whatever, you don't parrot that accusation at people or whatever and abuse them about it. You go up to them and you ask them a question. Is it true? Okay, Lenny, here we go. Here's a few things to clear up. Is it true that you're a Knight of Malta? Yes or no?
No.
Okay, good. And now, second one. Is it true that you and Jerry had raucous demonic intercourse while live on air on some other radio show? Yes or no?
It would have been.
No. Like, seriously, this is how these conversations.
Have you listened to that tape that they?
I have.
Have you? I mean, did you see the woman sounded like? If cross between Tammy Faye Baker and Edith Bunker.
I was gonna say it kind of sounded like Fran Drescher and Mick Jagger.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't the Hurricane, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it would be far more vigorous.
Thank you, Vinny. Very kind of you.
I mean, that's what Oxy Silver's good for, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they totally sounded like rednecks, and then they went on to some kind of one of these casting sites and found a picture of me dressed in like a cat suit, and that was it.
It is true that Sherry Kane was in the film.
Lynn, we have another accusation. You're not actually human. You're, in fact, a shape-shifting, transforming refrigerator.
Yes, I can tell you. That comes from one exclusive source.
His
name is Clay Douglas. Clay Douglas is one of the most, rabid Jew haters who I actually, in my naivete, supported in his American Freedom magazine.
We'll have to go. We'll be back.